is true. I'm hoping and I'm praying as my heart breaks right in two. Walking the floor over you. You left me and you went away. You said you'd be back just a day. You broke in your promise and you left me here alone. I don't know why you did, dear, but I do know that you're gone. I'm walking the floor over you. I can't sleep a wink, that is true. I'm hoping and I'm praying as my heart breaks right in two. Walking the floor over you. Someday you may be lonesome too. Walking the floor is good for you. Just keep right on walking and it won't hurt you to cry. Remember that I love you and I will the day I die. I'm walking the floor over you. I can't sleep a wink, that is true. Hoping and I'm praying as my heart breaks right in two. Walking the floor over you.
Well, yeah, there he is, Ernest Tubb. Remember Ernest Tubb? A lot of you old boys out there probably do. This is Terrible Tommy, Tom Metzger, Insurgent Radio calling. Insurgent Radio calling. It is October the 6th, Moonsday, Monday. I forgot to put that on show A, I believe. This is show B for Monday. Two shows. Where are you going to get the number of shows you get from us for a measly $20 donation a month? Are you kidding? You're getting enough information on here that's worth a hell of a lot more than that. Just Computer Man himself is giving you information that's, well, it might even be worth more than money. It might be worth your life. Yeah. Yeah, it's a pretty nice day, a little overcast, but no rain, no snow, lots of birds flying around. I feed the hell out of the birds. I'm a bird man, too, you know. So they're out there by the dozens and dozens out there in my front patio just pecking away. I like to watch those birds. The geese are getting ready to fly south, you know. They're starting to gather all over the place around here. And won't be long till they'll be flying south and leaving us here in ass deep in snow, probably, because I think it's going to be a cold one. I haven't seen any willy worms around to see whether they had a heavier coat on, because that's the way my daddy used to say, going to be a cold winter. You look for one of those willy worms. If that coat is real short, well, it's not going to be a real bad winter. But if it's real long, better bundle up. So I know I'm getting winterized around here, you know. Got to do my last minute painting done on the outside and get my heater panels back up on the wall and all that kind of stuff. You know, they got these little heater panels. They're about a half inch thick, and they're about a little over 2 feet by 2 feet square. And it just takes four screws. They mount on your wall and you plug them in. And you put them on a timer and they just work real nice. I got two of them in my upstairs area. I think I'll add one more before it really gets winter. And they don't use hardly any juice. They don't. They sure don't. Well, I'll tell you what. It's time for our really, really good buddy to come back on here. Gorilla Wolfman. Yeah, you used to know him as Frankie. He's going to get on here any second now by the magic of Arian Electronics and Arian Internet and all that kind of stuff. And he's going to do a monologue here. So here comes another one of those famous monologues. Now, what else was I going to say? I had notes around here. I put notes around here, and then I can't find the notes. And here's a couple of notes here. What the hell is this? Oh, let's see. Oh, I mentioned the border. border bandits a couple of times, and on the border down south of down by San Ysidro in California, by San Diego, and how they used to intimidate the hell out of the illegal aliens, which cut down the illegal alien traffic quite a bit. So I figured that was a good idea. Oh, in fact, I just ordered a whole lot of stickers. Yeah, they say Nuke Mexico, resist.com. So I'll figure out a price for you boys, and we're going to get a few thousand of them in here and stick them up. And if they don't like it, hell with them. But anyhow, the head of that special unit to protect the illegal aliens down there with San Diego PD, his name was Manny Lopez. Yeah, that's like sending a fox out to take care of the chicken house. Yeah. And also I mentioned, I forget in what way, but there's a book way back in the 70s called Perpetual War for Perpetual Peace. And I think I talked about it the other day a little bit, but anyhow, it's the author was Colonel Arch Roberts, as I recall, retired U.S. Air Force. And it was a good book. You ought to pick it up if you get a chance, because he had belled the cat a long time, belled the rat or belled the cat, one of the two, a long time ago, and how the military-industrial complex just keeps it going. There's always got to be an emergency, and always going to be, oh, the sky is falling, and they got to be building weapons, weapons, weapons. And Arch Roberts was one of the good guys that had been in the military for a long time, and he wrote that book. And let's see, what else have I got? Now, here's something you might be interested in. Go up to Trends Research, T-R-E-N-D-S, research.com. They've got a lot of good information up there, so check them out. And also, here's the information on Sam Bowers, the great leader of the White Knights of Mississippi, who I was fortunate enough to meet several years before he died. And here's the information on Sam Bowers. His date of birth was 8th month, 6th day, 1924. And he died on November 6, 2006. And he was incarcerated in, I think it was Pearl, Mississippi, federal prison down there, until he died. And he was convicted in Forest County down in Mississippi. And it's too bad I didn't get back down to see him before he passed away. But that's Sam Bowers, the clan that had teeth in the South. If all the clans that were running around in the South would have had the same teeth and they'd have directed towards the proper targets, I wasted a lot of time on chasing lone Negroes around when they should have been chasing around the white sellout traitor bastards. And they did go after the Jews. They were going to blow up a synagogue. Of course, that I personally think that sort of just plays into the Jews' hands. They get sympathy, and all these Christian Zionists, anything anybody paints on a synagogue or anything touches a synagogue, oh my God, the poor Jews are always picking on the Jews. Yeah, well, down through history, there must have been a reason why they keep picking on the Jews, because every country they end up in and get any kind of power, they get picked on. Let's see if I can find old Gorilla Frank, Gorilla Radio man here, and see what he's got to say.
Gorilla Radio calling, Radio Werewolf for some of you European listeners. And this is Frank Bauer, illegitimate son of Tom Metzger. Yeah, in a perfect world, that would have been great. My mom having an extramarital affair with Tom Metzger in the early 60s produced me. That would have been wonderful. You know, I was in my garage this morning. Like I told you before, I'm house-sitting, getting a house ready to be put on the market, but the market's terrible now, so it'll probably have to wait till the spring. But I'm talking to a neighbor as I'm busting up an old, old oak cabinet, but it's not in a good enough condition to be resold. But instead of me putting it out in the alley for the Mexicans to scavenge off it, because remember, I have a scorched earth mindset, I'd rather destroy this entire country and leave it in and cover with like 2 feet of atomic ash than let these goddamn muds have it. That's where I'm at, and maybe you guys don't agree with me. A couple houses down, like 80 years old, a white gentleman. You know, we're just making small talk, and then he takes me around some of the houses and tells me the history of them. Just, you know, being in a friendly conversation with the guy. And the guy said, I asked him, I said, well, so what do you think of, what was like Berwyn like 30 years ago? You know, Berwyn, Illinois, which was a very awesome bohemian neighborhood for a long time, 100 years maybe. And he says, well, the Mexicans are coming in. You just can't stop them. And I didn't say nothing after that, but, you know, when I departed from my conversation with the guy and I went back to busting up this cabinet, I'm thinking that's the mindset of the elderly American. So Tom Metzger must be a freak of nature in order for him to be as radical as he is, because this guy was maybe 78, 79 years old, and Mr. Metzger being 70 years old, but that's the World War II generation. Well, you can't stop them. The hell if you can't stop them. You do a couple of things and set the proper example, you know, it put Mexicans on guard in this country. Maybe we need to make this country so uninhabitable for these parasites, these social parasites, to come in this country and treat our country like a shopping mall, like they can take whatever they want. And that's their attitude, and that's their mindset. I want to set the tone today. I want to read the lyrics, because you guys know I'm an avid fan of heavy metal. And there's a band called Exodus. And for you guys out there that are into heavy metal, you need to get this CD. The name of the CD is called Temple of the Damned, and it's from a band called Exodus. And at least 8 out of the 10 songs on this CD, you would swear you would hear these type of words on Insurgent Radio, on one of the radio shows, because these guys have it on straight on what needs to be done. No, they don't say white power, and they don't have swastikas on their album covers, and, you know, if you corner these guys in an interview, they'll say, oh, of course I'm not a racist. But the fact that these lyrics are sneaking in under the Jew radar, remember, the Jews control the music industry, the fact that this is sneaking in under the radar, you guys need to buy this CD. You need to, you know, burn copies of it and give it to other white kids, and or maybe tell other white kids who like metal to get this CD and tell them, pay particular attention to the lyrics that are in this CD. So I'm going to read, I believe, track number 8. The song is called Culling the Herd. C-U-L-L-I-N-G. Culling the Herd, meaning thinning out the herd. Listen to these lyrics. I think they're awesome. It says, they're everywhere in every place, scum of the human race, sticking to my skin like a rash. Society's their scapegoat, but I am the antidote, and it's time to take out the trash. The world is a big cesspit of puke and piss and dog shit, but I ain't gonna be its whore. Follow me and I'll lead the way. Predators are now the prey. Results like these are hard to ignore. You may think I'm insane, or maybe just a little absurd. What you don't understand is, I'm just culling the herd. Second verse. I know I'm not the only one who thinks that something must be done to clean the garbage up off the street. Dare to look me in the eye. I bring the truth. I never lie. To me, they're just another piece of meat. The punishment will be swift and sure. For this disease, I am the cure. No problem, the doctor is in. My prescription for a better life, with a rifle or a razor knife, remove whatever under your skin. Please don't call it murder, turning the page, because murder is such a dirty word. What you don't understand is, I'm just culling the herd. When will everyone realize that some people should be sterilized? Their tubes are only fit to be tied. All they do is shit and breed, too ignorant to ever succeed. Stupidity should not be multiplied. Let them not a helping hand, or the future will be damned. The world will take a turn for the worse. The human race should be purified, or we'll all be mongrelized. Implement the cure for the curse. So interesting, he used the word mongrelized there, because how many times have you heard that on insurgent radio? You may think I'm a madman, or maybe just a little disturbed. What you don't understand is, I'm just culling the herd. You know what? Those are pretty militant lyrics, and I like those lyrics because that's exactly how we need to see the world. You look on your TV, you see starving little African kids, you need to say to yourself, so what? And feel it in your heart. You see homeless blacks on the street panhandling for money, trying to get their hustle on so they can get their dough. You need to say, so what? You need to be hard-hearted when you look in the face of a... Remember what Nietzsche said, and I've said this before, and I'll say it a thousand times again. Nothing has caused more harm on this planet than the follies of the compassionate. Came across an interesting book this weekend. I bought it in an Army surplus store. And it's called Professional Knowledge. And I guess it was written for Marines during the middle of the conflict in Vietnam. And it's basically some of the things they learned. Now, I bought this book a couple years ago, and I highlighted the hell out of it, thinking that there was a lot in there. And I don't know if I mailed that to Tom Metzger or maybe someone else in the movement. But buying it a second time, I didn't really find that much to highlight. So I guess when I cannibalized whatever parts of this book are useful to us, I was only thinking of you guys instead. So, like I said, this show isn't for the masses. It's only for you 1%ers who know, who don't just believe, but who know that they're going to die someday, whether it be 8 years from now or 80 years from now, whether it be 8 minutes from now. But you're going to live your life to the fullest and adventure for the survival of the white race. That's you 1%ers. All right. Says the gorilla must swim in the sea of the local populace, not only for camouflage, but also for its food supply. And it goes on to say, this makes the rice field and the granaries key terrain features in the land wherever they are abundant. But, you know, it's just something that needs to be repeating. You need to swim in the sea of the people. Don't get no tattoos. Don't wear your beliefs on your skin or on your T-shirts. You know, you're not winning the struggle by doing that stuff. Just because you like to shock people, shocking people is not, you know, shocking people with your shaved head and your boots and braces and your bomber jacket is not gonna make the white race think about their survival. I read on an update a couple days ago where Tom Metzger was responding to somebody who said, hey, Tom, I'm thinking about distributing a flyer that says this. And I don't remember exactly what it said, but Tom Metzger replied with, I tried being nice for years, and I didn't get any results on it. It's better to be feared than for people to respect you. And that's classic Machiavellianism, and we need to implement that. All right. Now, this what I'm about to read now is in the realm of patrolling. And I'm going to say this now, and I'm probably going to say it many times again. Pay attention to detail. You know, when I was in the Army, and we had a barracks inspection, and we would GI the hell out of these barracks, getting them ready for a full bird colonel to come through and inspect us while we're standing tall in uniform, inspect the barracks. That colonel knows you're going to polish your boots and your low quarter dress shoes, and he knows that you're going to press your uniforms and you're going to be shaved and you're going to have your wall locker in complete order. But what he looks for, he looks for dust in the corners. He looks for the stuff that you don't pay attention to teach you the lesson, to ingrain it in you, to pay attention to detail. You know, if you're on a lone wolf op and you're being followed, the person following you is not going to have a sign on his chest saying, I'm following you, I got you under surveillance. They're going to blend in with the society around you also. They're not going to stare right at you, give you a hard stare. They're going to be looking down on a crossword puzzle, maybe glancing up in your general direction, maybe talking into his sleeve where he has his mic. You know, I tell you guys to swim in the sea, the people too. Well, you know what? The enemy does that too. Why they have you under surveillance. So keep that in mind. All right. Pay attention to detail. Sounds hardly heard or not noticed at all, during the day may become extremely obvious during the still of the night. An example of this is of a patrol member who departed on patrol wearing a pair of jungle boots who had not worn previously on a night patrol. Within the patrol base, with its normal activity, and within the neighboring hamlet of barking dogs, no detrimental clothing or equipment noises were noticed. However, in the night silence of the jungle trail, the creaking leather was clearly audible for meters away. You know what? Before you go on any kind of night op, like I told you before, you need to jump up and down. You know, do you have any loose change that can fall out of my pocket with my fingerprint on it? You don't want to carry any loose change on you. You want, like I said before, your car key to be on a quick release ring on your keychain. And keep the rest of your keys in your car. And keep your one key, your car key, in your pocket. You don't want to wear any jewelry. You don't want to wear anything that's shiny. You want to dress in earth-tone colors. If you wear glasses, you need to get contact lenses, most rickety tick. You need to not, you know, wear glasses on a lone wolf op. If you don't have contacts, you need to get them. And don't tell anyone you're getting them. Okay. Prior to each night patrol, it is a good idea to have each member walk a short distance wearing the clothing and equipment he will wear while on patrol in order to detect undesired sounds. It may save your life. Very cool. Okay, here. 3, 4. Okay. An old trick here. On one occasion, a Marine night combat patrol halted to conduct a count of patrol members and discovered that there were 6 too many. But the patrol lost no time in separating the VC from the rest of the patrol. 2 VC were killed in the process. You know, I've heard that before. I heard that the Viet Cong will come upon an American patrol and not shoot them up, but follow them. Try to blend in with the American patrol, because at night you really can't tell friend from foe. That's why your rear security guy, you need to know, hey, there's no one else behind me. And every time you do a security stop, you need to be facing towards the 6 o'clock position. And maybe glance every now and then over your shoulder to see if the rest of the patrol is moving. You number 5 man, if there's 6 guys in your patrol, you number 5 man, before you move out, you need to tap your rear security on the shoulder and let them know you're moving out. Don't just get up and move and thinking that he heard you move. Maybe you guys were running and gunning for 36 hours straight, and you guys are sleepy and tired. You guys need to constantly keep, during a night op, you guys need to close the interval, not spread out like you would during the day. In forest, and, well, I doubt any of you guys are going to be in a jungle, but, you know, there's a lot of forest in throughout the United States. So you need to close up the interval, and you need to have contact with each other instead of whispering, or, you know, you could tap a guy on the shoulder to let him know something's up. Okay. Rare area patrols. Rare area patrolling is an essential part of counterinsurgency operations. In addition to providing immediate security, patrols can uncover evidence of VC activity. The patrols can determine changes in the attitude of local villagers, which have caused the VC terrorism and harassment, or caused by VC terrorism and harassment. Hard evidence, such as directional arrows or mine markers that may also be uncovered. The success of the patrol depends on the alertness and keenness of the observation of every member of the patrol. You know, it's not the guy in the front of the patrol or the back of the patrol that should be watching and should be observant of everything. Each member needs to be on high alert when you're on the move. Also, you know, the VC like to use pointed sticks fastened to trees to point the way to either an approach through the jungle, a pathway through the jungle that's not known to everyone. They'll use that to point to the area where there's mines so they don't walk through a minefield that they set up themselves. Or they'll have a pointed stick pointing in the arrow of in the direction of away from a minefield so they don't get tripped up. So you know, that's something that we can use also. Okay, pursue and then some. On several occasions when patrols have been in close close pursuit of fleeing BC, Marines have been distracted by the packs dropped by the BC along the trail. While the pursuers stop to examine the pack contents, the BC made good their escape. You can always come back and pick up the pack, so keep your pursuit a hot one, and don't forget security measures as you pursue. Now, from an insurgent point of view, I can look at dropping my pack. Let's say I come under fire or pursuit from occupational forces, whoever they may be, foreign or domestic. I can have an explosive wired in my pack where when I want to break contact, I can drop the pack like I want to lighten the load so I can make good my escape, hoping that one of those would investigate it and I have it booby trapped so it blows up in their face. You could do that also, but if you're the one pursuing, you know, be careful messing with the pack that was abandoned by someone you were pursuing. It could be booby trapped. But then again, it could be pertinent information you need to get a hold of. Don't forget, this can be used against street gangs or fleeing from street gangs. Remember, what we're going to see in the future is a tribal war. And don't forget also, you know, these neo-Nazi clowns, if you want a protest on a street corner, you're a clown. Because these tactics are not going to do anything. The system has been evolving since the 20s. I keep saying that. We're using 1920 tactics against an enemy that has evolved over the last number of decades. You know, you read on the update the other day that I guess the 3rd Infantry Division is being transferred over to the United States for potential uprisings in the future. They have all kinds of prisons out west in the western part of the United States that are unoccupied but fully staffed, and they've been so for years. You know, the system knew, and they know that shit's going to hit the fan in the future. But you guys want to march on a street corner? You guys want to get tattoos with your ideology on your skin? How fucking stupid can you be? I mean, the enemy is resourceful. They're crafty. You need to be twice as resourceful and crafty. Stop thinking, they're not going to do nothing to me. I have my rights. Bullshit, man. You have privileges. Whenever they want to move against you and take you away in the middle of the night without letting you know what's going on, they can do so, and they will. So get your head out of your ass and stop following this pipe dream that, you know, I got the Constitution. The Constitution is a dead letter. It has been circumvented years ago by black-robed despots on the Supreme Court. So don't even think that's going to protect you. Don't forget, I'm not hollering at you one percenters out there. Just these so-called white activists who want to pretend like they're involved in activism, but they're not doing anything. Okay, just like hunting a deer. That's point E here. While on a patrol at night or in heavily vegetated areas, stop briefly every 10 to 15 minutes to look, listen, and smell the air, and take careful look around. People make noises and create distinctive smells. Campsites can be located by smells of old campfires or refuse. You know, that's an interesting thing there. You know, one time I was walking through this parking lot at night, and I always want to practice my stalking. I always practice stalking. I don't hurt anybody. I'm not talking about stalking females. I'm not a sexual predator, but I always practice my stalking skills. I told you a story that one time with Tom Metzger on the show, how I followed this Asian couple who walked out of a grocery store. I followed them for blocks. They never knew I was following them. And then I waited when no one was looking, and I came up upon them like I was, you know, practicing how close I can get without being discovered until the last minute. And then I scared the hell out of this Asian couple, and I said, "Oh, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to startle you, sir. Do you have the time?" You know, but I always practice these things. Well, one night, and it's like, you know, back in the summertime, early summer this year, I was walking through a parking lot at night, and I came upon this strong female perfume smell or cologne or whatever it was. It was very distinctive. And I basically followed that smell to the source. I basically followed it around the building, out of the parking lot, around to where the entrance to the apartment building is, and sure enough, there was a woman in there who was going to, who was going into her mailbox, getting her mail, and I went in there, like, in the vestibule of the apartment building there, just looking on the names of the marquee, looking like I was looking for somebody, but sure enough, that smell came from her. So, you know what? You can't discount smell. You always got to be, what did I say before? Pay attention to detail. All right. Try not to smoke for at least 2 hours before going on a patrol. Smoking tobacco tends to temporarily deaden the sense of smell. If you're smoking, you need to fucking stop now. Stop smoking. You are not, if you have a weakness towards tobacco, alcohol, or drugs, you are unfit for insurgent activity. You have a weakness. Recognize your weakness and do something about it. When you use spiced or medicated shaving creams, hair tonics, or aftershave lotion, you tend to saturate your own sense of smell. So try not to use these at all. Remember, a little dab will do you. I remember that commercial back in the 60s or 70s. But, you know, if you go down a lone wolf op, by all means, you know what? You can buy unscented soap at one of these Whole Foods stores. You know, I suggest showering with that after or before you go on any kind of op. You don't wear cologne. You don't wear Old Spice. You don't wear cold water or Giovanni or Axe. You don't wear none of that stuff. You don't want nothing distinctive about you, not even your smell. Okay. Well, you could eat a bunch of burritos and smell like a spick, but I don't really recommend that. Okay, a detailed search. The importance of developing a detailed search techniques is illustrated by the experience of one of a friendly waterborne patrol. Damn it. Hold on, guys. All right, here we go. The patrol encountered an unlighted passenger junk with 40 passengers aboard. As the patrol craft came alongside the junk, they observed passengers being dropped over the side and passengers furtively slipping vials into the bilges and under baggage. A partial search of the junk, remember, a junk is one of these Asian boats, you know, it's just a rickety boat, basically. I don't know why they call it that, but that's what they call it. As the patrol craft came alongside the junk, they observed, I read that, partial search of the boat and its occupants revealed over 200 vials of 500,000 units of penicillin, 33,655 piasters, whatever those are, and 24 new batteries. Obviously, this was a logistical boat for the Viet Cong. Most of the penicillin was hidden in the underclothing of two women who were feigning illness. That's kind of a cool technique we can use. A couple of our Aryan women want to slip through a security thing. We can be, they can be lying down in the back seat of a truck or something. We can sprinkle water on their face like they're in feverish, and they could be hiding something in their bra or in their panties or wherever. So that's something we can do too. Okay. Did I read 55? Yeah, I did. Okay. All right. Ambush. Ambush insertion. Covert insertion of ambush elements can be best accomplished by moving them into the ambush area as part of a regular patrol. The ambush elements should be dispersed throughout the patrol formation with their radio antennas detached. Until completion of the ambush, another patrol can be used to pick up the original ambush force and drop off another if desired. In this manner, the patrol size is kept constant by making it difficult for the enemy to notice that an element has been dropped off. Well, you're on a patrol, right? And you think that maybe someone's got you under surveillance? You go out with a bigger group of people, and as you're casually going through a wooded area where they could temporarily lose surveillance of you, you drop off a few guys. But the Marina Patrol keeps on going. And the guys you drop off, they could be set up for an ambush for the people that are following you. They could be wait for maybe a certain period, and then they can move out and do something different while the surveillance team is following the original patrol. So use these creatively. Another technique is to have the pickup patrol attempt to flush the enemy toward the ambush by using artillery and mortar fire. Okay. Interesting. Good stuff here, huh? Hope you guys are liking this. Alright. Comments on ambushes. Important points to remember about ambush are contained in these comments by a battalion commander in Vietnam. Ambushes are one of the most effective measures of inflicting personal casualties on the enemy. The imaginative and skillful use of ambush can also have a detrimental psychological impact. Aside from normal local security, ambushes should be at least 500 to 1,000 meters distant from unit night defensive positions. The tendency to make ambush elements should be avoided. 5 to 8 men is a good size. Well, you know what? We can use ambush techniques against a street gang. We can use ambush techniques not against law enforcement per se, but they can be used against enemies of our race. Hey, you know, I've noticed that there's this store that caters to Asian people. I've walked in this store pretending to be a customer, and all the products are in Asian writing. Obviously, this store is only for Asian people. Remember, you got to look at churches and stores and apartment complexes as like footholds into our society. Think of them as like scouting parties of an advanced army, of an advanced party of a larger army of an invading force. That's what you need to think of these Mexican and Chinese restaurants. These restaurant owners are stocking away huge dollar bills. And you dumbass Americans are buying their food and eating their food and probably being poisoned by their food. And they're getting richer. And what do? They subsidize bringing more of their own people into this country. Churches with Chinese and Korean writing on their marquees outside should give you good indication on that being a base of operation for support of the further invasion of your country by non-whites. Remember that. Reports from reconnaissance units in Vietnam emphasize the importance of the following training. Scouting and patrolling, emphasis should be placed on the route selection, immediate action in danger areas, and reporting techniques. Map and aerial photography reading. I told you guys a number of times about doing satellite readings and looking at satellite photos of a area you can be working in. You guys need to know how to use a compass. Ambush and counter ambush techniques. If you're walking along and you get ambushed, what we learned in the Army is that your best chance of survival, which would be pretty slim, your best chance of survival is to assault through the ambush element. That means if you're walking along and you're ambushed on your left side, you need to drain this into your muscle memory by training you guys, and I hope you guys are training, you cells out there, to just immediately assault through the ambush element on your left. Just running and gunning and screaming and doing whatever. Screaming, you know, you're causing a more psychological stress on those ambushing you. So remember that. Assault through the ambush element. All right, establishment of patrol base. You guys need to know how to do that. Land navigation, patrol orders and reports. Observation and recording. You need to be recording anything. If you're on the move and you see a convoy going down a road to your right by 200 meters, you need to make note of that, especially if it's a military convoy. Personal hygiene in the forest and in the field. You need to take care of yourself. You need to definitely wash your feet and change your socks as much as possible. I'm telling you are no good as an insurgent if your feet are infected with trench foot and immersion foot and all that. You need to know some basic first aid. You need to know how to cross a river and stream. Okay? You need to know about camouflage, small arms and hand grenades, FO procedures, that's forward observer, communication techniques. All right, use of the Claymore mine by reconnaissance elements. Normally, a reconnaissance element selects a night harbor site prior to the hours of darkness and occupies it immediately before, just after dark. The first task on entering a harbor site is to establish security positions. Simultaneously, warning devices and booby traps are in place when necessary as additional security measures. You know what? If you establish a patrol base in the woods, you need to have early warning devices to let you know if somebody's stealthily moving through the woods at night. So, one principal indicator that the VC look for when judging a prospective target is the degree of local security exercised in and around the target. Consider that you, as the leader of a raiding party, are examining an enemy target for a future raid. What are the items you want to know about the enemy position and force? The following list contains a few sample items of information that you would need to know. If you're going to conduct a raid on something, you need to know the layout of the position, location of individuals and crew served weapons, routes and frequency of close-in patrols, location of static security posts, static meaning in place, they're just standing a watch, degree of training and security consciousness of enemy personnel, fire support available in the target area and lapse time between request and delivery, reinforcements within a given distance and the probable route they would travel. It's pretty fucking interesting. Okay. The locations... the locations of fortifications, individual and crew serve weapons, and vital areas within the position will be governed by the mission of the unit and the application of fundamental tactical principles, mutual support, fields of fire, number of weapons available. Probable avenues of approach, I talked about that before. You need to know the term ACOCA, observation of fields of fire, cover and concealment, obstacles, key terrain, and avenues of approach. If you are defending or you are attacking, you need to consider these things. Dead spaces, terrain, and vegetation all will affect weapons positions, the guiding theme and patrol routes and frequencies, and the routes of walking security posts is to avoid patterns. The key word here is random. If you're pulling security on something and you're walking a post, if we get to that point in this country where it's a Mad Max society, and it will, even when you're coming and going from a safe house, you always want to be random in the times you leave and the routes to and from. You always want to mix things up as best you can. All right, try not to cover the same route at the same time, night after night. By varying routes, times, and sizes of patrols, you can cover a large area and gain just as much information and avoid ambushes. Fixed security positions may be needed. However, make every effort not to restrict their hearing or fields of observation. Okay. Shifting positions. Unit commanders should consider shifting defensive positions after dark to avoid giving the local populace the opportunity of pinpointing their exact positions for the VC. Recently, a platoon established a harboring site during daylight hours, which was under observation of local indigenous personnel. Shortly after dark, the platoon commander shifted its position approximately 150 meters from the original position at 20:30 hours. That's 8:30 at night for you civilians. At 8:30 at night, the original position was brought under intense small arms fire and mortar fire by the enemy. So if you move into a position at daytime, you want to shift that position at night, because when you moved into it at daytime, you could have been under surveillance. So right after dark, you need to shift your position so they don't get a fix on you. Okay. Variation in placement of sentries, ambushes, listening posts, and patrol routes, and their employment and random schedules will reduce the enemy's ability to conduct surveillance by denying him freedom of entry into the area. The surveillance of prime target areas is apparently accomplished by personnel having access to the installation, exacting and detailed screening of local laborers to ensure proper identity and loyalty will reduce the enemy's surveillance capability and his knowledge of the key installations and their locations within the defensive area. Data entry and exit screening must not be relaxed. Okay, basically, and I encourage you guys to do this, to infiltrate, get jobs within some of these enemy corporations and stuff like that, and you know, give us the lay of the land. Let us know what's going on. Okay, effective night operations during the hours of darkness are essential in all warfare, but in particular in counter-guerrilla warfare. The basic ingredient of successful night operations, offensive or defensive, is the confidence of the individual Marine, in this case, individual jackbooted thug for the system, and his ability that his unit to operate in a night environment. This confidence comes only by detailed planning and painstaking successful training. And believe me, our enemy knows a lot more about that than we do, so we need to start learning that stuff also. The scope of such training should not be limited, but should include all aspects of tactical operations. Offensive actions involving night movements should be stressed. Areas in which emphasis should be placed are the areas as follows. Techniques of fire during periods of darkness. Now, I want to bring this to your knowledge right now. Human beings have a tendency, when they're in a firefight at night, to shoot high and over their target. For whatever reason, the human being has a natural tendency to shoot high at night. You want to avoid this. It's better to shoot into the, not directly into the ground, but to make your shots low. You can ricochet shots into your target, don't forget. So it's better to shoot low than to shoot high. So if you guys are doing any night firing or anything like that, keep that in mind, that you'll have a tendency to shoot high at night, but shoot low instead, ricochet bullets into your target. Individual weapons firing under all conditions of natural and artificial illumination. Night relief position procedures at small unit level. Night reconnaissance patrols. Individual proficiency in land navigation at night. Individual and unit night discipline. You know, if you're in a patrol base or you're on the move at night, you need to be as quiet as possible. Don't walk through the woods clumsily. Like I said before, a couple times a month, you need to be practicing walking through the woods at night alone. You know, if you want to do it with a partner, have him go 200 meters down, and you're going to walk to him on an azimuth. I just see an azimuth at night, you need to line up your arrows. I can't go into that now. I don't have time to go into that, but prior service guys would know about that. And have your buddy listen for your approach. Try to be as silent as possible. Individual and unit night discipline, use of detection devices in offensive and defensive night operations, night live firing exercise for squads and platoons. Well, I don't recommend at this time that we get above a fire team size of a cell. That's five guys. Five guys, a five-man team, that's perfect, man. You can do a lot with a five-man team. You don't do no damn recruiting either. That's where Bob Matthews went down. So remember that. In conjunction with night operations, it becomes apparent that to cope with the rigors of the Vietnamese environments and sustained day and night operation, personnel must be in the best physical condition. To do this will require much more than average physical training program. A high-end continuing demand must be placed on the physical capacity of individual in order to build confidence in his ability to function properly under conditions of prolonged physical exertion. Weight training is not going to do that for you. Building big, bulging muscles is not going to do that for you. Remember, functional exercise for combat fitness. Another tactic used by friendly forces, and which has a great deal of potential, was the leaving behind of Marines when the unit left its nighttime position. In almost all cases, the VC will move into a vacated CP area, and if friendly troops are present, a lucrative ambush can be established. You remember, we're in a guerrilla war against whatever system, whatever occupying force there is. We're watching them. We watch them move out of an area, a patrol base, a CP. We wait a couple hours, and then we go see what they left behind. You know, you can dig up a garbage pit and get the number of how many guys are in the patrol. You know, let's say the enemy is using MREs or C rations. You can count how many C rations or MREs packages there were and determine how many men are in that force. That's why if you go into patrol base, you take all your garbage with you. The only thing you should be burying is your shit and piss. And don't forget, the British SAS, when they go into an area, when they leave the area, they take their shit with them. They shit inside of one of their sea ration packages and tie it up. Yeah, that's right. They don't leave nothing behind. British SAS are some pretty hardcore boys, man. They know how to fight. But when they go into an area, when they leave that area exactly how they find it. And that takes discipline. Discipline you guys need to be working towards. All right, sources of information. Counter-guerrilla operation must offer most of the usual source of information for combat intelligence with one considerable difference. Rather than the enemy being the most abundant source of information, as in conventional operations, the operating area itself provides the bulk of information. Within the operating area, the civilian populace is probably the best source. The effective exploitation of civilian sources may require most sophisticated procedures than usually practiced at battalion or regimental level. Reliability of source information is the principal consideration. I don't even know why I read that or highlighted that. A source file is therefore suggested as the means of collecting data on local sources. This file should be included as a minimum of the following. The name and description of the source, particular area in which source is capable of obtaining information. Reason for source cooperation is think about this. We're not going to get popular support. So that's going to be the reason why a lot of whites are going to narc us out if we're involved in the activities. So, method of contacting the source, and past reliability. Three considerations must be kept in mind when a source is interrogated. First, the attitude of the source. Is he openly hostile or merely passive? Second, is the knowledge of the area of operation will normally be limited to his immediate hamlet or his village. With these considerations in mind, a civilian may be able to provide information on the political attitudes and sympathies of local villagers. See, if you're shooting your mouth off about your racial views, and don't forget, these are only for people who are going insurgent, who are going underground, who are forming cells and individuals to actually do something. You know, you guys think, I don't think it's right that you should keep quiet about your racial views. How are you going to let everyone know? Listen, you're not going to win the masses. You're never going to win them. White people are too cowardly and scared to join us. So it's time that we start using other means. Terrain and how weather can affect it. Logistical support available to guerrillas operating in the residential area of the source. Okay, captured documents. Captured documents are an important part of the intelligence collection effort. In many cases, the circumstances surrounding the capture of a document has proven to be as important as the document itself. As an example, the document containing enemy unit designations is more valuable in the order of battle work if the precise location and time of capture is known. Why did I read that? You should be writing nothing down. You write nothing down. Okay? Wow, I thought I can get all these done today. I guess not. I guess I'll have to do another guerrilla radio show here. All right, intelligence collectors move as close as possible to feel out, measure, and sketch the record. Locations of guard posts. Now, this is you. You're doing the scouting here. And remember, you gotta do it with casual confidence. You can't do it in a manner. You got to watch your body language. You can't do it in a way that's going to attract attention. Sentry schedules and weapons are noted. Collection of detailed data on enemy movement into and out of the area. Disclose the interval between movements of persons and equipment. This is all the VC. This is what the VC was looking for when they had the Marines under surveillance. The weapons and the firepower available. A telling example of the length to which the Viet Cong go to obtain information on the enemy was discovered in September of 1965 in the Cam Ranh Bay area. U.S. forces apprehended several children attempting to indicate the U.S. defensive position. sticks, approximately 1 foot long and pointed at one end, were being propped up on racks and on other sticks to point toward the main positions. These sticks also have been found in bushes with pointed ends aimed at the main gun position. Remember I talked about those sticks earlier? Knowledge of terrain is a key to Vietcong strength. It is largely the result of living off the land. However, it is enhanced by the limited scope of the Vietcong operations, which facilitates detailed terrain analysis. In studying the terrain, the Vietcong seek to capitalize on favorable terrain. The VC gathered extensive data on roads, villages, rivers, streams, lakes, ponds, canals also. If there is even a slight possibility of their affecting the operation, dimensions and locations of bridges, bushes, walls, and fences are recorded and sketched. Attention is given to likely enemy defensive positions and observation posts. VC movement. The Viet Cong are as thorough in planning their movement to the objective as they are in reconnoitering, reconning the objective. They practice rigid movement discipline plus tactical sound assembly and dispersion procedures. Their doctrine in this regard varies little, if any, from that of the United States or other Western countries. See, the VC copied off of us. What does differ, however, is their manner and discipline in which such a doctrine is practiced. VC leaders have fought for years and have learned the benefits to be gained from careful movement, assembly, and dispersion. When they talk about dispersion, they're talking about bunching your guys up too close to one another. You want to avoid that as much as possible. Okay. Let's see what I can get done here. During withdrawals or disengagement, the Viet Cong occasionally organize impromptu ambushes conducted by small elements attempting to delay, disrupt, and disorganize the pursuing enemy. No attempt has been made to close with or destroy the opposing forces, the opposing troops, because the VC, in this instance, are usually at a disadvantage. The purpose is simply to enable major elements to break contact. You know about breaking contact, guys. It's a good skill to have. Okay. I don't know if I read this. No, I didn't. Okay, the ambush is the most common and probably most effective form of combat employed by low-level guerrilla units. The most successful ambush technique employed by the Viet Cong features entrapment. This tactic was exploited time and again by the Viet Minh against the French. The trap is baited by the Viet Cong attack upon a fixed position. For example, a stronghold. This prompts the dispatch of reactionary forces and sufficient strength to provide worthwhile ambush targets. Okay. Unexpected or sudden confrontation. Well, let me comment on what I just read there. All right. Your raided installation. When the installation is being raided, they call for help. You have ambushes set up on all the main roads coming into the installation to ambush any relief that's coming to the aid of those that are being raided. So you can have an operation where you can have one force raiding an installation and you can have outlying ambush forces set up an ambush for any relief coming to that installation. So, good thing to know. Many movements by the VC unit is at night, but occasionally it's traveled by daylight. Using local guides, much of this movement is cross-country. Upon halting, the VC immediately prepare for defense against air or ground attack. Sentries are usually posted in pairs at a distance of several hundred meters from bivouac areas. This distance is reduced during darkness. Sometimes VC caution nearby villagers to leave prepared positions undisturbed so they can be used again at a later date. Then in later withdrawals back to the base area, the VC often travel portions of previously used routes. A pursuing force does not normally anticipate that the VC have prepared elaborate defensive positions at points along their withdrawal route. That's why it's good to know the area that you work in. Okay. I guess I caught this in mid-sentence, and I'm really pissed off at myself for this. Page 187. 72. Damn, I messed up. Well, I'll do the best I can. Unexpected and sudden confrontation of two opposing forces, neither of which is aware of the other's strength, weapons, or composition, or mission. Since no offensive plan will have been devised for the particular situation, the BC realize that they will be at a disadvantage. Doctrine calls for avoiding this situation. However, being aware that there will be instances where this cannot be done, they have formulated three objectives to accomplish when the meeting occurs. Be first to deploy troops to critical terrain. Be the first to open fire. Be the first to assault.